Once again, let's open our Bibles and make sure you're open there. We're picking up where we last left off. We were looking at the issue in Romans chapter 12 and verse 10b, in honor, preferring one another, the labor issue. And we got ourselves carried over here to 1 Corinthians chapter 12 because at the end of our last lesson, I was talking about the issue of how preferring one another fits so perfectly in honor, preferring one another, to that medal system that I talked about on Sunday that we use in our military. And we ended by talking about that when, even though one person is given the honor, even if it's the Medal of Honor, the result is supposed to be that he is an example, as we were talking about the Marines, to all the other Marines in his unit. And really, it becomes an example and a motivation. And just as we talked about in the definition of the word prefer, it's an advancement. It's a dignifying issue to the body as a whole, or the core as a whole. And my point in all of that was that when one in the body is honored, all the members rejoice with it. And that's why we were over here and saw that take place here in 1 Corinthians 12:26, right there when we were talking about issues of conduct and issues of behavior, when we were dealing with the selfless godly love in the living aspect of it here with all of these things. We went over there to 1 Corinthians 12 and found them all four of them. And one of those things had to do with whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it, or one member be honored, all members are honored with it. And I said that's a building up process. That's a compacting process. And when something gets compacted, it becomes strengthened. And that's exactly where this was going, right down here, to the point where the assembly becomes strengthened by that. Well, this is a critically important issue. Because as the assembly, as I said, as it has been strengthened by its compacting, it provides for it to be able to take on greater weight, more responsibility, and further operations of God. And the more you understand that, and the more you appreciate that, the more you'll understand something that Paul does over in 2 Corinthians in chapters 1 and 2. Come over to 2 Corinthians chapter 2. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, and he comes along here, and if you think about what the Corinthians were doing as he wrote the first letter to them and how they had so many problems, a lot of the problems that they had were inner turmoil within the assembly that made it so that that at the exact same time issue wasn't going on. I said before, we're going to have to start adding to our thinking here that our single individual edifying isn't just what's in view. It doesn't get diminished, but there's something just as critical to your individual being edified and growing and maturing and developing. Along with that, our Father, who has given us these individual operations to accomplish within the assembly, has an overall, not just but several, overall operations that He can do with us collectively, with us as a body. And it's those that have to be in view as well, as we in honor prefer one another. And that's some critical thinking that never seems to ever go on in many assemblies, is that God isn't just interested in the individual's growth and being built up, but also that He has operations for the assembly to do. Well, the more you understand this, the more you'll appreciate and understand why Paul over in 2 Corinthians chapters 1 and 2, he talks to the Corinthian saints about their problems that they've had, and Paul uses some very stern language with the Corinthians. He's very tough with them, and in fact, he's so tough they accused him of being spiritually schizophrenic, that when he was there with them, he was all nice and everything, but then when he was away, he terrified them with letters. He wrote these fiery letters off to them and everything. But none of that, they had a misunderstanding of that, that he gets straightened out as well. But you'll appreciate that they really had some serious problems in 1 Corinthians. Some problems with their own sonship education. As we go through 1 Corinthians, whenever we go through that, we'll be able to come back and pinpoint, put our finger right on the place in the book of Romans where they were screwing up, where that didn't work positively and properly and all this kind of business. Their response was problematic. But you'll understand when Paul comes to the second letter of the Corinthians, he talks to them about his sternness with them, and yet he still does what he does and says what he says out of love when it came to dealing with all the discord that they had in their assembly, especially some discord concerning this sinning brother situation. If you remember, this one member of their assembly was fornicating with his mother. And this horrible sinning brother situation from early on in 1 Corinthians. And then Paul comes along and exhorts the Corinthian saints to forgive that brother. That this brother actually responded to the correction. And he stopped it. And he was able to actually correct himself. And by utilizing the mechanics of really what's sitting back there in Romans chapter 8 verses 1 through 13... he was able to get himself back into moving along once again with his own sonship life. Well, Paul comes along here and he exhorts the Corinthian saints to forgive that brother and to manifest their love to him. And look at what he says in 2 Corinthians 2, pick it up in verse 7. He says, "So that contrariwise ye ought rather to forgive him and comfort him, lest perhaps such a one should be swallowed up with overmuch sorrow." Now that, of course, has to do with the way this sinning brother had repented after a godly sort. He had sorrowed after a godly sort. And it wasn't just that he was sorry for getting caught, he wasn't sorry for this, but he really and truly was brokenhearted because he saw the reality of what he had done in light of who God made him to be in Christ. And he responded magnificently. And so now they are to forgive him and comfort him, lest perhaps such a one should be swallowed up with overmuch sorrow. But keep reading. Lest you think that there's just, it's just going to get kind of this feely kind of thing. We're going to be getting emotional with each other. And it's going to get fuzzy and warm. We're going to just start kissing one another and hugging. Now watch. This is what I'm after when I say how critically important this is. Keep reading. "Wherefore, I beseech you that ye would confirm your love toward him. For to this end also did I write, that I might know the proof of you, whether ye be obedient in all things. To whom ye forgive anything, I forgive also. For if I forgave anything, to whom I forgave it, for your sakes forgave I it in the person of Christ." Look at verse 11. "Lest Satan should get an advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices." Wow! It's that big a deal? You bet it's that big a deal. "Lest Satan should get the advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices." In this specific context, Paul saw that if the saints at Corinth would not respond to the labor to begin to prefer that brother in honor preferring him. If those saints resisted that and failed to do that, Paul saw that if they didn't respond to that brother now in a way that would provide for the assembly. You see, if you read that carefully, he's just not concerned with the one brother. He's concerned with the entire assembly at Corinth. That Satan should, as he says there, take advantage and get an advantage of us, all of us, the whole assembly. You'll understand that Paul now recognizes if they didn't respond the way that would provide for the assembly to be built up further, that the adversary would actually be able to succeed with that assembly and successfully make it so that that assembly would not grow as an assembly. And it would not be able to mature as an assembly. I'm going to use an expression here that I is not a good word to use that to use for this, but I'm using it to get the point across. In essence, that working of individual godly edifying and godly edifying of an assembly as a whole is really a fragile thing. Now, that's not the best way to say it, but that's the way I want to say it right now to get the point across. It's something that most saints aren't even aware of, and it's something that Satan is keenly aware of that can destroy the operations of God that he has to utilize that whole assembly. Maybe fragile is a good word to use for it, but that's the way I want to get it across. But Paul saw that if this wasn't checked, if they didn't respond properly to this brother, the assembly could possibly be taken advantage of by the adversary, and it would thwart their growth, thwart their maturity process, and in turn, and this is the worst part of it, they would not be able to take on responsibilities of further operations of God as an assembly, not as an individual, but as an assembly. They couldn't. So therefore, my understanding is you're expected to now begin to understand and appreciate that what takes place in the assembly individually, as you, as an individual son or daughter, in this sonship education as far as growth and maturity is concerned, and through that growth and maturity, we've talked about being able to participate in further operations, ongoing and increasing operations of God, will that exact same thing takes place in the entire assembly of saints, in the church in which they get, as a whole assembly. Maybe you never thought that God has designs, plans, operations, aims, goals, and objectives, not just for you fill in the blank, your name, but for Triangle Bible Church as a whole. If you don't think so, and you need to be convinced of that, spend some time in the 16th chapter of Romans and pay attention to what Paul does in his greetings. He's not just going down a list of, hey, I really like this guy, that girl, this couple, blah, blah, blah. No, those are all assemblies that as whole assemblies, the assemblies at Rome are to be connecting with. And as they connect, even grander operations of the Father can be put into effect that have far-reaching consequences on this earth, and more importantly, the impact in the heavenly places. Well, just as Satan's the satanic policy of evil's objective with an individual son, we've talked about this a lot. He has an objective of thwarting that son's education and derailing it. Well, it makes it so that son, by becoming victimized by the policy of evil and not operating specifically upon the exact things that are said to him and built into the curriculum to enable him to deal with the opposition of the adversary, and all of that just brings his growth to a stop. Just as that makes it so that the son doesn't continue to participate in one of the many of the operations of God like he ought to, and meet the objectives of his own sonship education, well, that exact same thing takes place with an assembly as a whole as well. And just as it's a feather in the cap of the adversary to come along and destroy, derail, and thwart the individual son's education as a son, well, it's just as much a feather in his cap to do that to an assembly as a whole. And he can actually do that in assemblies where some sons are being edified, but this other aspect of the whole assembly and putting this labor aspect together of not just ruling in these offices, you think, well, that's all there is to it. No, there's not. There's this too, in honor preferring one another. And that's why I say, you deacons in this assembly, you need to be clued in to stuff like this. Because this is what you're to be on the lookout for. This is what I'm supposed to be clued into and on the lookout for. Because there's a lot more ways to thwart our success than you can possibly imagine right now. And most of it hasn't got a thing in the world to do with horrible, sinful things happening. That's also another reason why your eyes need to be trained very closely in scrutinizing and making sure that the bishop of the assembly is doing his job and not being distracted by a bunch of other stuff. There's a level to all of this that I myself haven't even appreciated the office that I myself hold. In fact, if I'd have known all that went with this office, I told Keith Blades once, as I told you, I tried so hard, you never knew I did this, but I tried so hard to get him here to be your pastor. And I told him I would resign, I'd get a job, and I'd support him. And I said, I'm not qualified to do this job, but I said, I'll tell you what, I would be a great deacon. I just could not talk him into it. He said, your assembly has a pastor and you're it. So anyway, but there's a great deal to this. It's really like so many churches, they think they operate in light when all they've had is a little match, and they think that's really something. And then you'll get one or two that will get a candle or two going. But it's the rare assembly that is able to turn the full lights on to the entire project and illuminate the whole thing. But you've got a few in your Bible that did. Thessalonica could do that. Philippi could do that. There were churches in Colossae that could do that. There were churches in Rome that could do that. And those churches were connected. They were connected with one another through their sonship education. Now, anyway, I'm getting excited about that. That's why that there's a church up in Minnesota that's just now starting to get online with sonship education. They've got a young pastor up there. Those people need your prayers. You've got a guy down in Texas that you've all met that's got two different groups that he's undergoing sonship education with. You've got a little group that's meeting up in Canada. You've got a little church that's meeting in Evansville, Indiana. You've got another one up in Elgin, Illinois. They're not many, and we certainly aren't much to look at. But this is going somewhere beyond the walls of this assembly. It's designed to. Now, let's try to add something else to this before we get out of here tonight. When especially you're dealing with a portion of the curriculum that we're dealing with now, that's going right after our interactions and our function, come back to Romans 12 now. It's dealing with our function as sons within the assembly as a whole, and dealing with the operations of God within the local assembly, we need now to understand and appreciate the fact that God not only has in mind your individual progress, Or as we talked about when we were talking about preferring one another, putting that forward, advancing it, and that the individual progress isn't just what's in view, but our Father has in mind the assembly as a whole is progressing along that course of sonship education as well. That's how God designed the curriculum to work. And there are operations that He has that are specifically designed for the assembly as a whole to engage in. Heavens, folks, that's one of the reasons why the Lord's table is something we all engage in. And when these corporate matters of our sonship education don't take place, for lack of a better expression, corporate matters, there difficulties arise. That's much of what the difficulties were in Rome, or I'm sorry, in Corinth. There's difficulties in connection with that. Or there's successes that take place in the policy of evil hindering that assembly. Then the assembly itself ends up being adversely affected by that. And it ends up not participating in various operations of God that it could participate in if it grew, if it matured, so that it could take on that responsibility like it's supposed to. Well, an example of that, or an example of a particular aspect of our sonship education that's designed to specifically provide for an assembly of saints as a whole to grow and mature is not only, look, go back to this one, is not only found in verses 6, 7, and 8, the labor aspect of the first component, but it's also found at the end of verse 10, 10b, in the labor component, or the labor aspect of the second component. Let me say that again. A particular aspect, an example of the particular aspect of our sonship education that's designed to specifically provide for the assembly of saints, to provide for the assembly as a whole to grow and mature, isn't just that you're serving in these offices, that you're giving with simplicity, ruling with diligence, showing mercy with cheerfulness, but also that you in honor prefer one another, in honor preferring one another. It's that end of verse 10 in connection with the second component to our receiving the instruction of wisdom that goes with that aspect of the first, that last aspect of the first component. By the way, just to underscore the importance of getting this in your understanding is seen in the fact that if you look at Romans chapter 12, all right, you've got, all we've got left is 13, 14, 15, and 16, right? And really, our four decision-making skills end, does anybody know right offhand where it ends? It ends in verse 7 of chapter 15. And then we have the remainder of Romans for what our Father designed for it to do. But what I'm after is, if you just, to show you the importance of what I'm talking about here, getting that thinking that you have individual labor that takes place, but you have labor that naturally comes out of that in which the whole body is going to be benefited. When you, in honor, prefer one another, you're not just talking about individuals, you're talking about the whole body being benefited. And to show you the importance of that, and getting that in your understanding, I think it's seen in the fact that the next time this issue comes up, the issue of thinking in this corporate body sense, even though it does come up in verse, here in chapter 12, it comes up in verses 13, 14, and 15 in the fifth component, but look especially down in the sixth, the last component to our receiving the instruction of wisdom here in chapter 12. Look at the last part of verse 16, the part that deals with the godly labor there. Paul says, "Be not wise in your own conceits." Be not wise in your own conceits. Look, if a saint is wise in their own conceits, then they're doing something, they're doing things that are destructive to the assembly, right? If you're wise, if you're doing something that you're wise in your own conceits, you're doing something destructive to the assembly functioning as God designed it to function. And the ones that are spoken about in the passage as, look at what, if you look up there, you'll see him talking about men of low estate. Paul comes along there and be of the same mind one toward another, mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. And then he ends with a labor aspect, be not wise in your own conceits. All right? This is bringing full circle this doctrine. When you see him talking about there and forming this complete circle, actually the final component to our instruction of wisdom returns to and links itself to the first component. And if saints are being wise in their own conceits, they're doing things that are destructive to the assembly functioning as it's designed to function, and the ones that are spoken about there in that passage as men of low estate, those are the ones that are going to end up suffering for it. Now look around you here this evening. Is there anybody in here that you could look at and say is a man of low estate? No. We don't have them yet. But if we keep on functioning the way we're designed to function, we will get them. And that doesn't mean that they're poor people. I'll explain it here. Just hang on. The final component, verse 16, to our instruction of wisdom returns to the first one. It returns right back up here to this issue that we've got on the board. Forming that complete circle of doctrine, you come right back to dealing with with this other aspect of mindfulness, being mindful about one another. And here you're going to be dealing with one another still as members one of another, but now you're going to acknowledge that there are some in your assembly who are of low estate, lower estate than others are. And you're going to take a course of action with them based upon the fundamental attributes of conduct and behavior you learned up here as members of a body would have with one another. But it's now going to incorporate loving kindness, all of this with it. You're going to incorporate the loving kindness of the second component, and also some things that you're going to learn out of the fifth component when we come back to dealing with others in the assembly. You're going to learn some things about care and about concern. And add that to it, and that's going to make it therefore so that when the men of low estate are dealt with in the assembly, those of, by default, higher estate condescend to them of low estate. And the estate that he's talking about is their spiritual life as sons. They're low, you're high. And if you haven't figured that out, you condescend to them, you do that, you function and labor doing that for a very particular purpose. That's because when you get someone in the assembly who, by the way, when you've got, let's see if you can come up with this. When you've got some things that are of high estate and some things that are of low estate, what is that? It's out of balance. That's good. I thought maybe you'd get that. It's a what? Inequality. Yeah. Well, never mind. That's okay. It's a disparity. You get a disparity between saints that, and it's been on your mind, I know, because I've heard you talk about it, and you've asked me about it. What do we do about it? Okay, this is the beginning of what do we do? If somebody comes in here out of the blue, never heard anything before. Now, I don't expect you to really know any of the ins and outs of this, but I'll tell you what you're going to do in short order. You're going to condescend to men of low estate. That is a, yes, absolutely, yeah. And the reason you're going to do that is because you don't want them left behind. If they come in here as our body, as a part of our body, you don't want them to fall short. You now have for them everything you have for every other member of the body. and for the benefit of the whole assembly, so that the whole assembly can advance on and do more than it's already doing, the condescending therefore takes place. And that provides for what Paul will call there and brings up there, be not wise in your own conceits. To coin an expression, it provides for a conceitless environment to exist in a local assembly in which nothing is done in that assembly on the basis of conceitness or conceit. And when that's in existence, my understanding is that's when a local assembly is able to function in accordance with all that God has designed for that assembly to be able to do in connection with the instruction of wisdom. So to answer Brian's question, what I'm talking about, when he's talking about a man of low estate, he's talking about someone who's entered your assembly who basically is a clean, he doesn't know anything. But then when all of this is put together, and when we take this doctrine, this circle of doctrine, connect it together, and we have the full orbed fullness of our instruction of wisdom, that's going to provide, and only when that's done will it provide for the instruction of justice to now come along and attach itself to that. And then the instruction of judgment comes along next, after that. Well, I think it's fascinating that when the instruction of justice and judgment get dealt with, if you don't have time to do this right now, but if you were to read on down from verse 17 of chapter 12, and you read all the way through the 13th chapter, where we're going to get justice and judgment, you're going to find that just about everything that's said in justice and judgment is said in connection, and everything said in connection with those two categories of sonship decision-making skill is almost all addressed individually. When you go through the judgment and the justice, or pardon me, it's reversed them, the justice and the judgment, receiving the instruction of justice and judgment, in Paul's writings, in Romans, almost everything that you get there is addressed to the individual. In other words, you don't have a specific reference to the saints being dealt with there as an assembly of saints. The information you receive there is information that you're going to be applying individually in individual encounters that you're going to have, how you're going to individually live within the nation and do the things that a national entity requires you to do, the powers that be and so forth, and individual circumstances and individual situations you're going to find yourself in. But if you let your eyes scan down through that, the next time you come to return to the issue of the local assembly environment specifically is in the instruction of equity. That makes sense. It's in the instruction of equity. From chapter 14, verse 1 through 15, 7. And the acid test, so to speak, for a local assembly to function as God has designed for it to function and be able to fulfill the operations as a whole assembly, under level one sonship education, is when it has been in existence long enough so that there starts to become a disparity in existence between the edificational statuses of the saints within it. And we don't have that pretty much right now at all. And the longer that disparity exists without dealing with it properly, the more vulnerable you are to, as Paul would say to the Corinthians, to allow Satan to have an advantage. And no longer do you have a group of saints that are on the same level, so to speak. But since the saints, by the way, maybe this is something we need to address here. There's a fundamental function that you should be doing all along. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. I don't know. I don't know what you do. But I do know this. There's, And it could just very well be that you just don't have any results, but the results aren't here. What should you have been doing all along before you even got to Romans 6? That's right. You should be doing the work of an ambassador for Christ. Yeah. And as you, to use the popular expression, win souls, you're not winning them. But as you, if you would lead someone to Christ, and they would say, well, where do you go to church? I go to church. And then you bring them in. Well, now we got a newborn baby. We got a brand new Christian in our assembly. What do we do with them? Sorry. You might as well not come here. We got a room in the back. You go back there and just start listening to tapes. No, there's a way to deal with them. And that's all going to be brought out as we go through all of this. But the curriculum has that in mind. But the point of the point right now is that as you've been doing the job of an ambassador for Christ all along, new saints should end up coming into the assembly. And eventually you've got, because of that, some weaker brothers. And some that may be very weak. And the acid test for that assembly to function properly and its ability to fulfill all the operations God has designed for an assembly to be able to fulfill under level one sonship education will be determined based upon the saints' equitable treatment of weaker brothers. That will determine whether they truly, in honor, prefer one another. That is, whether or not they will condescend to men of low estate. Whether there will be any conceit or conceited operations in that assembly. I just don't want to be around them. They don't know anything. No, you should. Your desire should be to, in an office, like showing mercy with cheerfulness, and honor them, preferring them, condescending to men of low estate. And we'll get into all of that as we go through it in detail. And really, you ought to just leave it like that for now. Don't even think about it anymore, because really all I'm doing, I'm probably doing you more harm than good here. But let me show you just one other thing, because it's just so cool. This is why, if you've got your Bibles open to Romans, go over to the 14th chapter there, when you're taught about the weaker brother and the equity. And I told you that you have these two now aspects of edification that are in mind. One is your individual edification as a son, but the other is the edifying of the body as a whole. Well, this is why when you're dealing with the instruction of equity, and Paul returns to the corporate issue of the body, there are two times in this section where the Apostle Paul talks about, for meat, don't destroy the work of God. Look at it. One of them is in verse 15. He says, but if thy brother be grieved with thy meat, now walkest thou not charitably. Godly love and charity. Destroy not him. What is that? Individual. With thy meat for whom Christ died. Look down to verse 20. For meat destroy not the work of God. All things indeed are pure, but it is evil for that man who eateth with offense. Now, all I'm after there, you've got two times when the Apostle Paul talks about, for meat, don't destroy the work of God. One applies to the work of God individually in that weaker brother, and the other one applies to the work of God in the assembly as a whole. That's why he talks about destroy not twice. You've got destroy not in verse 15 and destroy not in verse 20. One destroying is an individual destruction, and the other one in verse 20 is the whole assembly's operation. Well, it refers to exactly what it says, eating meat, which the meat offered to idols and some of the restrictions and everything, some of these weaker brothers were coming in, and they had a problem with that. It wasn't just simply, I'm a vegetarian just because I like eating vegetables. But you as a son are going to restrict your liberties for the sake of that brother, so that you don't throw a stumbling stone in front? Sure, you know that you can eat that, but you're not going to destroy him with such a stupid thing as meat. And you can almost hear, I know Paul didn't use the word stupid, but I've heard Christians be ripped to shreds for even less than that. And one of the things that some of you, only a few in this assembly, really have an appreciation for is how vicious some people are in local assemblies, local churches, to other people in it. But there you've got strong ones in the faith, despising weaker brothers, not walking charitably toward them. That can destroy the weaker brother individually. And at the same time, because it does do that, it destroys the work of God in that local assembly as a whole. It brings that particular work to a halt. Well, we'll stop there. That's a lot more than you really needed to know. to get this doing its job sufficiently. But what that does, though, is it should give you an appreciation for the view ahead, for what lies ahead a little bit, as to the importance of what we're doing now, as well as the effectual working of the edification process that your Father built into all of this. It's magnificently done. And it is complexly done, not complicated, but there's a complexity and a design to it that is amazing. It's staggering. Well, we'll stop right there, and on Sunday we're going to finish this up by really getting down to the nuts and bolts of how do we labor with one another in honor, preferring one another, and we'll try to smooth out whatever wrinkles, clear up any fuzziness, and be able to put the second component of our instruction of wisdom into our hearts properly. And you thought I was going to say to bed. No, you don't put any of this to bed. You put it to work in your hearts properly. So we'll stop right there and we'll pick it up on Sunday morning with our heads bowed. Heavenly Father,